I arise today. I arise today with a mighty strength of the three in one. I arise today.
This is, you would think it's St. Patrick's Day. Hi, this is Rick Cogan, the show's After Hours. This is kind of like an all-Irish extravaganza. The music you're hearing is from Switchback, those two terrific musicians who were on last week. Martin McCormick and Brian Fitzgerald of the Fitzgeralds family. The CD is Hibernian Mass, and my first guest is Dennis Foley. How are you?
Rick, nice to be here with you
again. It is always good to see you.
Yeah, we always have some fun.
And you always have new things coming out. Your latest is a book. You and I are going to work to define exactly what this book is. I think I'm going to call it a novel, but it is called The Blue Circus, a Chicago Story, and it's got such a cool cover with what you would have to call city workers and one executive and a shattered City Hall sign.
Yeah.
This book originally, Dennis, and we'll get into your fascinating Southside background, started as a potential TV show, didn't it?
Now, that's right. It was, this thing started up in late 2012, yeah. Roll it into 2013, and I wrote the pilot for a TV series, and it picked up an award out at the Beverly Hills screenwriting contest, and that's how it came to be. And eventually, after writing a few more episodes, I said to myself, hey, let's run this into the book format, and that's how I started in on the book.
That must have been really empowering. I remember when that happened, winning that contest, never having written a screenplay before, never having submitted one before. That must have been really empowering for you.
Yeah, you know, it was really strange, too, because, I'm not like a big binge TV watcher.
Right.
But my son, Pat, and he got me interested in The Wire,
an excellent show.
Yeah, fantastic. And I'm a former assistant state's attorney. And to me, watching The Wire, the thing I liked about it most was it was so real. It was realistic.
Yeah.
So after watching that, I said, man, wouldn't this be fun? And I sat down and I came up with the concept of the Blue Circus based on my days also working as an electrician with the city of Chicago. And I had a blast, putting it together. And it was exciting and new.
Well, as you're just listening to Dennis Foley talk already, he's been an assistant state's attorney, a streets and sandman. He is probably, this will change in time, Dennis, I'm sure, but you are probably now most famous for your first published book that was published by Lake Claremont Press. That book was called...
Yeah, The Streets and Sandman's Guide to Chicago Eats.
Yeah, and it was one of the bestsellers in the history of Lake Claremont.
And I had a blast with that because that's when I was at working as in the streets and sand department, yeah. But I was also going to school at Columbia at night.
Well, one of your professors at Columbia, you started writing that whole streets and sandman stuff.
Right.
And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, they are not strictly kind of restaurant reviews. They are cultural reviews. They are historical kinds of pieces, and they really deal with this city in depth. And you start doing that, and a professor there named Sam Weller suggested, wait, maybe these have a life beyond the classroom.
Yeah, it was funny because everybody you're typically working on your tale of woe, and then in Sam's class, we were doing stuff that was unrelated to what we were working on, and it was I started doing food reviews because as a streets and sand guy, one of the biggest parts of our day is where we're going to go and get some lunch.
Of course.
So, we had fun with that.
True. You know, it's also probably true of everybody if they were really able to do it.
Yeah.
How did that book empower you, Dennis? I mean, it was a tough, but you don't automatically write that book and think of yourself, well, I'm a writer.
Yeah, and I can still remember the first day when I was sitting in a class at Columbia and one of the teachers read my material in class. And, people, the reaction that people had in the students, it made me feel like, hey, maybe I can do this.
Yeah.
And then when the when Lake Claremont came out and said, hey, we'd like to publish this, you know, it was it's mom and pop eateries, but I wanted it to be more than that. I wanted it to be about, like you said, hey, there's detours when you're at a certain area.
The culture and the history. And as a Streets and Sand guy, if you took an interlude from the legal profession for a while to work for Streets and Sand, you get a better sense of the city than almost anybody. There are places cops don't have to go. You work your district, and city Streets and Sand go everywhere.
Yeah, and that was one of the beauties, is I always thought that I knew the city, you know, pretty well. And then, you know, but you get opportunities to work in every different neighborhood, whether it's north, south, east, west. And, you know, you see the good and the bad that the city has to offer. And one of the things that was really cool is working for Streets and Sand is, you know, when you go into a neighborhood, it's like you belong. Because everybody's used to seeing the blue truck or van rolling through. So you came in and people left you alone. And you got an opportunity for me as a writer just to observe. And then not only that in a neighborhood, but to observe the Streets and Sand people that you work with. We had many a colorful character in that regard, too.
Oh, my God. No kidding. I'll be with Dennis Foley for a while. We'll get Mike Houlihan in here, too, to share the mic and talk. We're not celebrating St. Patrick's Day. It's just, these two guys especially are the most energetic Irish creatives that I know. So please stay tuned. I will tell you to make Sundays your official night to tour the city, watch Chicago's Best at 10, and stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events on See Chicago at 10:30 on WGN-TV. We'll be right back. Welcome back to After Hours with me, Rick Hogan, talking to Dennis Foley, the eminent author and filmmaker, author most recently of The Blue Circus, A Chicago Story. And we've been joined by another of this show's guests, the other eminent kind of workaholic, Mike Houlihan, who is not only putting on the fourth annual Irish-American movie Hooli in a couple weeks, but he has comes in, he says, I just finished the book. So you are the first radio... Well, you're actually the only radio book critic. What do you think of Dennis's book?
I loved it. Dynamite. Also very incriminating. The first thing I asked him is, did your brother read the book? And it's fun because, you know, Studs Lonergan and the Lonergans, and, you know, James T. Farrell went to Mount Carmel.
Right.
Yeah.
So when we were in high school, we all had to read that book. And for a kid in high school, that was pretty racy stuff.
Oh, no kidding. You know, yeah, sure.
You know, you're going to want to read this. But when my kids were growing up, I made them read the trilogy and everything. And but you do great homage to Studs Lonergan, and now you've created a new Lonergan, and you're setting it up for a sequel. Come on.
And I know, I mean, when you say that about like the Studs Lonergan trilogy, and that's what, you know, you and I had exchanged messages too. Yeah. I said, you know, I mean, I used to wonder, what would Studs Lonergan's family be like if they existed somewhat contemporary Chicago?
Right.
And, you know, that's when I said, okay, Danny Lonergan and his union boss, Big Brother Tom.
Yeah.
And when you mention my brother, too, you know, my brother was the head of Local 134 for a number of years, and he was...
you keep that kind of hidden in this book.
Yeah. And
Not a family history, per se.
No, I mean, it's heavily fictionalized, but I also wanted, you know, his blessing, too.
Sure.
So
don't want to tick him off.
No, he might give me a couple right crosses. And,
exactly.
He's got a heavy right.
Yeah.
But he, you know, he went through material back a number of years ago when it was strictly in a screenplay format, and then you know, said, hey, everything was good with him, and because he could see it take off in that fictional direction. Because, you know, we base some of it in there on different people we know. But
sure.
It takes off.
Well, but I would also think that anybody like Mike, any Southside Irish mover and shaker, as is Mr. Houlihan, the characters, fictional as they may be, Dennis Foley, would jump off the page as people they knew from Cork and Kerry and various other places.
That's
one of the joys of it, though, I think.
Yeah, and you know, when I worked for Streets and Sand for 7 years, from 1998 to 2005, and, you know, when you're in there, and it was such a great learning place. I was going to Columbia at the time, and I would, you know, take my breaks and break out my computer and write stuff and some of the characters that I saw. But you kind of needed that distance before I could go back and write. And so then, you know, I had that time off, and then, you know, I said, I'm going to go back and write this because those characters needed to be written about. There were some fun guys and fun things that happened, and I get a chance to weave in some Chicago politics and stuff into it. So, you know,
sometimes they ain't so much fun.
Well, one of the things about both you guys, you were great. Mike, of course, used to write the Hooley and the Hood column for the Sun-Times and for various other places. You guys, and I don't think it's endemic to the Irish, but you guys are astonishing observers of other human beings, the way they talk. There is something that attracts you about, and this isn't an Irish thing. Mm-hmm. I think I have it too, though.
But you're Irish.
Yeah, half. I'm half.
No.
I'm half, yeah, Mary Lou. Mm-hmm. I'm black Irish.
Right.
Yeah. It's true of both of you, isn't it, Mike? And you both have a ear for dialogue, and you have a curiosity, I think, about other human beings that distinguishes both of your work. What do you think, Dennis?
I've been a fan of Mike's for a long time, ever since I went and saw, you know, Going East on Ashton.
Sure. Which
I remember,
everybody saw.
Yeah, and it was you know, going in there, I was out at the old Beverly Arts Center, mm-hmm. you know, on a little further down the road on 111th, and getting a chance to, I remember we came in a couple of minutes late. And all of a sudden, instead of like, hey, look at these you know, schmucks coming in. Let's throw stuff at him. He's like, hey, guys, hurry up. Come on in. We're just getting started. You know, we're in my basement here. He's got the couch going.
Oh, yeah.
Come on, sit down.
Memory.
And you start getting that sense of, like you're saying, it's you know, this is a story that Chicagoans can relate to.
Yeah.
You know.
Mike, have you ever written for television?
Because I've attempted it.
Yeah.
I mean,
Dennis, tell Mike, I don't know if he knows the story about, I mean, this thing started as a, you know, TV pilot, and what happened? It won an
Yeah, it picked up an award out of the Beverly Hills Film Screenwriting Contest back in like 2013.
Beverly Hills, California?
Yeah.
Beverly Hills,
California. Yeah, as opposed to, you know, the country.
And, you know, I mean, I had an agent, and she's shopping it around. You know, it's kind of sad, though. Nice lady. She had some good books and stuff she sold, and I liked her, but, you know, it was sad because the lady went blind.
Oh, wow.
And it's kind of tough having a blind agent. You know, it's like, you know, I said, okay, I'm not sure how this is going to work.
It's another
but,
book
you know,
that.
The people that were looking at it were in London. And, you know, it didn't pan out. And then 6 months ago, one of the executives that was in that company started up her old place about 3 years ago and shot me an email and said, whatever became of the Blue Circus? And
oh,
I said,
wow.
Well, hey, guess what? The book's coming out.
Yeah.
So they have the screenplays and the book, and they're looking at it.
Great movie. Yeah. Really a great movie.
And you know how that is. That's like hitting the old lottery, but I'm just glad the book's
What about
here, too.
Old Bob? I mean, the movie, you were making a movie. And
Old Bob. Yeah, Old Bob, and it was transformed into Not a Stranger, it ended up being called. And what happened on that, it's kind of nice, is we just got the word on September 4th. You know, we have a distributor that's been involved, and it just came out like on Amazon Prime, and then on Fandango Now, and it's on you know, those like flights, airlines, the in-flight channels.
Good.
So, you know, that's nice because it's a chance. It's Chicago. It's Chicago places. We had pretty much a lot of Chicago characters. We had to bring in a few L.A. people to give, you know, the name a little credibility.
What was the name of that one guy?
Richard Russo.
That's right.
And
He was
one of my favorites in the old Donnie Brasco movie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He ended up being an interesting bird to work with. You know, we kind of butted heads a little when he started ripping into some of the Southside help. Mm-hmm. And it's like, hey, you know, you know what you're getting into. We're not trying to be pros here. This is a low budget movie.
Yeah.
And this is what you're going to get, so let's work with it. So, you know, ended up being fine.
Down.
But I always respected the time he put in.
Yeah.
He's been, you know, a good good backer of the film. So.
Mike, this goes a little to the, you know, about Mr. Houlihan's adventures in the film biz, trying to even start, trying to get our Irish cousins, which I thought was a fascinating film, was sort of a, it's not tongue-in-cheek, but it is humorous, but it's a look
at... It's kind of tongue-in-cheek.
It is. Yeah. Well, but not totally, Mike. I think there's a really interesting subtext there about the way Irish-American... The way Irish and Irish-Americans differ.
Yes.
And are the same. The reason you started the Irish-American movie Hooli is you thought, after its great reception here, said, oh, man, I'm going to do the Irish-American film festival circuit, and there was none.
No. You know what is funny? I had a friend, Jimmy Deanahan, who was the Minister of Culture. Do you remember him for Ireland? Mm. And I called him. I said, hey, I can't get into this Dublin Irish festival, and... Got great reviews. Roger Ebert loved it.
Yeah, Ebert loved the
movie. What's the deal? I said, and I'm thinking, Chicago. I said, make a phone call, will you? You know, and so he did. And the woman who was the artistic director was really teed off about it, okay? So I get a phone call from her, but I know she's been pushed into it. And she was just, you know, frosty.
Oof.
And, a snob, basically.
Yeah.
You know, she said, oh, no, you can't bring your film here. They'll destroy it. It'd be, there's nothing but snobs here. I thought, like you. So anyway, that didn't pan out, so.
I mean, I went, the one, I think it was the last year at the Hooli about the doctor.
Oh.
The doctor that was treating,
treating, the doctor's sword.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, great it was, movie. You have the whole, the Irish tie-in, you got the Japanese culture and all the, you know, this mix going on and what's going on with this mysterious sword. And it ended up being a really cool flick to watch.
That was a great,
movie because the story was truly almost unbelievable.
Yeah.
He was unbelievable.
Hiroshima and all that other stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. He lived through, lived through the bombing of Well, first he lived through the torpedoing of a boat, a prisoner boat, then through the bomb, is a doctor's sword. But we'll talk at length about the three movies. I want you to sort of sell them. I wrote about them in today's paper. You can see it. But I want you to sell them to Dennis Foley.
I'm telling you, this will be a great movie.
He is a filmmaker.
This may be two movies. You know that?
And, you know, and
or a miniseries.
I'm glad the book's here, but it would be nice. You know, I mean, you know, in Chicago, we get Chicago Fire, you get Chicago PD.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, this is a look at
we need
Chicago
to talk to Dick
and the way it works, but through a different lens.
Dick Wolf.
Through a different set of eyes.
We need to get Dick Wolf in here.
And
all right, we'll take a break and get some news, and then I'll be back with these two fine gentlemen, and we'll figure out the meaning of life. That's the music of Switchback, ladies and gentlemen. A couple of Irish guys are in here along with me, who's a half-Irish guy, Rick Cogan. The show's after hours. My guests are Dennis Foley and Mike Houlihan, who can talk about anything, actually. Dennis is going to read a little selection from his latest book, which is titled The Blue Circus, a Chicago story soon to be a major motion picture. And it will undoubtedly make its way to the, let's see, four, five, six. Movies don't get made that fast. Maybe the sixth annual movie, Hooli, the fourth annual.
That would be true.
Wouldn't that be fantastic?
Yeah,
wouldn't that be? How has it been? You were just talking about how in trying to get a screen for your fine film, Our Irish Cousins, you couldn't do it. And there were no Irish-American film festivals, which is a fact that still stuns me. There is one now because you started one. How has it been? I think this year's films, they are really good, and they are so vastly different, too, Mike.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to find good films.
What's the criterion? Has to be made by an Irish filmmaker?
Some Irish connection, like the filmmaker or the star or the story has to have some Irish theme to it, or You know, I was stuck at the end, and I said, we got to get one more film. We need a comedy really bad. And this guy sent me a comedy out of L.A. It was very funny. And I said, what's your name? Collins. I went, that'll work. That might work. And then Barbara looked at it and went, I don't think so. Okay, forget it. And then this guy with Mother's Day showed up. But back to Dennis's book.
Yeah.
It would make a terrific film. Not cheap, though.
Yeah, and... You know, like the one thing, if you look at things you write, and like for me too, you know, Rick, you were saying about, where's the line between the truth and fiction? I'll tell you, one of the things I really enjoyed in here is, and Mike, the character Mary Lonergan, the mom.
Yeah. Right, right.
Now, Mary Lonergan is based off of my own mom.
Sure.
You know, we've all had, there's not anybody out there listening that hasn't had some, you know, somehow been affected by cancer.
Right.
And in this book, The Blue Circus, you know, Mary is battling cancer. And, you know, she comes home and tells her kids, you know, they gave me 8 or 9 months. Mm. But she's happy.
Yeah.
Because she thought she was only going to have 6 weeks or 2 months. And she's happy because she can see her kids, the grandkids. She
and
can plant
tell
flowers.
Them she loves them.
Yeah. And, and my old mom, she got 8 or 9 months. And they, you know, they said, okay, yeah, this is what you had. And she was happy.
Yeah.
But she ended up getting 6 weeks.
Oh, wow.
So the nice thing here is I can fictionalize it and give the character based on my mom gets more time.
Oh, that's
so she can
sweet.
Be with her family.
There have been a lot of fantasies out in this book. I mean, he's kind of a henchman.
The scenes at the Dubliner I enjoyed, and by the way, kudos to Jack Kelly, the owner. You know, the Dubliner changed hands, and it was Kelly's tap.
PJ McCarthy's Dubliner was fireman bar.
Yeah, and they ended up. Yesterday was the last day, and it was $1 Guinness pint. Drafts.
Oh wow!
So what a good way to go out with a bang. I was at a family wedding; otherwise, I would have been there throwing those pints down.
Yeah.
So you know.
Yeah. He had a lot of locations from the South Side that, actually, there's one where, I don't want to give away the plot of the book, but somebody calls 911 and gives out the address 10214 South. Is that your address?
I did pick an address on Bell that doesn't exist, I wouldn't piss anybody off.
Okay.
But, like you were saying, too, part of the fun I had is the old Streets and Sandman going out and eating lunches is going back and bringing some of these places in as you can have
Facebook. You went to Fat Tony's or
over to Tony's Beef.
Yeah.
But, you know, like weaving in, like Ignacio. You know, over in the heart of Italy area,
and
having some scenes in there where the guys are all sitting around eating, and you know, because Ignatz is one of my favorites, and you get a chance to bring that into the story and make it a setting.
Well, you get a sense in this book of the real Chicago. You know, the three of us kind of know the real Chicago better than some. One of the things that impressed me, Mike, in maybe, I don't know if it's the star film of the movie Hooli, Cardboard Gangsters, which a lot, you know, the image of, ooh, the Irish is this happy-go-lucky people, let's sit down and have a drink and tell a long, fascinating story.
Yeah.
This Cardboard Gangster movie.
There's no leprechauns in that movie.
No, oh my lord. And I described the star, who I think is going to be a huge star.
He won the Best Actor Award from IFTA.
I don't doubt it. He reminded me, Dennis Foley, of like a young Dick Butkus.
Yeah.
He looks
and
equally ferocious. This is about a gang of drug dealers, young drug dealers trying to take over from older drug deal, like the Irish mob. It was a real revelation to me, Mike. Mm-hmm. When you first saw it, what did you think?
You know, I was looking for a film, and do you remember The Young Offenders?
Sure.
Okay, Julie Ryan was the producer of that, and she was here last year. And what I'm trying to do is build relationships
with
anything and between filmmakers and myself and the filmmakers. And I said, you got anything? She said, you should see Cardboard Gangsters.
Mm-hmm.
So I sought it out and I watched it. And went, oh, this is unbelievable. Yeah.
Is that set in Dublin or?
It's in a town called Darndale, which is a suburb
of
Dublin. A lot of travelers.
Oh, okay.
It's a real nitty-gritty spot.
Ooh, sure. Yeah. But it's scary.
I wouldn't want to live there.
Now, I wouldn't want to go to a party there.
Oh.
I mean, the party centers are wild, just wild. But I think what you're doing in part two is highlighting a what I think is a sort of vibrant film, whether it's organized or not. You know, everybody thinks, oh, The Quiet Man, there's the ultimate Irish movie. It's that first movie, the Conavga or whatever.
Covadonga.
That's a haunting film, too.
Sure
it's like
is. Yeah.
Young Alfred Hitchcock or something.
Exactly. That's the way I described
it. Is it really?
Yeah, and the Irish Echo.
Great minds.
Yes.
Great minds.
Thank you. But, you know, Dennis's book has all that.
I agree.
Well,
I totally agree.
There's all these characters. We know some tough guys, you know, and we know some bad guys, and they're in that book. And we also know some funny guys.
Yeah, there's some clowns in there, but you got the other guys, too.
The circus, exactly.
Yeah.
I highly recommend it. And it shouldn't ordinarily take people that as long as it took me to read it. It's just that I kept it in the bathroom.
Yes, but you were also...
Hey, bathroom reads are good reads.
Yeah, but you were also orchestrating the movie Hooli.
I know, I'm a little...
In which one of the things that distinguishes this, before we take yet another break, is that you bring in... The filmmakers. I mean, there is, whether it's the writer or the producer or star or the director, you bring them in so that people can meet them at
We treat them like royalty. That's the whole idea. So that they will want to come back or they will recommend their friends to come here. They get flown in. We pick up the cost set. We put them in the Hilton. The Hilton's our sponsor. Very nice. They stay there all weekend. The only thing, they don't have to pay for a drink the whole time they're here. And they get to meet two other filmmakers that they've never met before, and they build relationships. The funny thing, well, I'll tell you.
No, go ahead.
Last year, one of the filmmakers was also a startup tech guy, right? And his name's Kevin Fortuna, and he's also extremely wealthy guy.
He made that movie in Atlantic City.
Yes,
right? Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. But he also sold his first company for something like $400 million, okay? So I didn't realize that. I didn't know. I thought it was a good movie. So on Saturday mornings, we go to all the Irish radio shows, and the filmmaker from Friday doesn't have to go because his movie's already been seen.
Right.
So I'm with the Irish guys, and they're making wisecracks about the Yank made a movie. I said, hey, you dopes. That guy's loaded. And if you want to get financing for your next film, you better get on it. And they did.
Mm-hmm. Good.
And he helped them finance.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a film called Bend in the River by Colin Broderick that they're making. That should be, hopefully that'll be back next year.
Well, what you're doing with that thing is amazing. You can go to Movie Hooli. That's movie, HOOLEY.org, or MikeHoolahan.com, or you can just stay tuned. And we'll be back to talk more about Dennis Foley's book, Dennis Foley's movies, Mike Houlihan's writing, Mike Houlihan's radio shows. You have two shows now, right?
I have three.
Three shows. Well, of course he does. Starting a
My sons have a show.
Yes, of course they do, but those are your sons.
Yeah.
So it's like your show.
It. Yeah.
Genetically. It's genetically your movie. Yeah. We will be right back.
The people the Lord has chosen to be his own. Blessed the people the Lord has chosen to be his own. Blessed the people the Lord has chosen to be his own.
That was Switchback. I'm Rick Cogan. Sitting next to me is Mike Houlihan, and sitting next to him is Dennis Foley. Dennis's new book is The Blue Circus, A Chicago Story. It is a wild ride. Mike Houlihan is will be the entire, in the next edition of the book, every word on the back will be from Mike Houlihan, because he is raving about the book.
It is terrific.
It is terrific. You can go to DennisMichaelFoley.com to get information about that and other things. Mike Houlihan is busy putting on in a couple weeks, and I would get your tickets now to the Irish American movie Hooli, the fourth edition later this month at the Siskel Center, which is a really nice place to see a movie.
The nicest indie theater in the country, I think.
No question. And it's the September
28th, 29th, and 30th.
One movie
each
night.
It has a very intimate feel.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Slain Irish Whiskey is doing a complimentary whiskey tasting every night. So, You can't beat that. You get the helmet, you get free whiskey.
Yes, and you get so much free whiskey.
You gotta drink responsibly, they keep telling me, though.
Who tells you that?
The guys from Slane.
Well, they don't, what do they know?
Yeah.
What do they know? They just run a company.
Yeah.
Dennis, you wanted to say hello. You guys are going to be on for another half hour, but you wanted to say hello to somebody, didn't you?
Yeah, you know what? I just wanted to do a little shout-out. I asked Rick if it was okay. It's not the usual thing I do.
Well, you guys have been on the show enough to know that you can do anything.
You know, there's a young buckaroo that I coached in lacrosse starting in seventh grade. That was back 9 years ago. He was in the first lacrosse group that we have, the Beverly Lacrosse Youth Lacrosse, and he was in the initial group. And then, you know, seventh grade, eighth grade, and then he went into high school. I coached him in high school. His name is Grant Barr. He's a Beverly kid.
Yeah.
And he's been battling non-Hodgkin's lymphoma for a while now. Oh. The kid's one tough guy. You know, his uncle was Billy Grant, you know, the fireman who was killed in line of duty back a number of years ago.
Right,
so
right.
The family has had some tough
tragedy
times. And, you know, Grant just got, went all the way down to 75 pounds.
Oh.
And now he's really fighting. He's been fighting all along. He's making his comeback. He was getting great care at Northwestern, and now he's just been moved out to a rehab place. So Grant, if you're listening, okay, when I do a little reading later, it's for you. And make sure I'm going to come see you later this week. You know that. And I want the book read by that point. If you don't have it read, I'm going to have to go ahead and give you a slap because I might just give you a pop quiz. Okay?
Or, Grant, if you don't like to read, you can just go to the movie Hooli and just watch three.
A very nice family, and he knows everybody's rooting for him.
Didn't you have a party for this kid?
Yeah, we did a party, and it was great because it was the Beverly community came out, and we had 220 people in the backyard because, you know, the Grant's dad had passed away about 6 to 8 months ago.
Pat Johnson, the cop?
Yeah.
He was there.
And we had a great group come out, and they, you know, got a nice chunk of dough to throw in to help him out with his expenses.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, that's still something about that whole community out there. You know, that community is as solid as any in Chicago. You look at, you know, the changes in places like Wicker Park and all these places that just yuppify, and then and there's nothing really cohesive. Even my old neighborhood of Old Town is not what it is, not what it was.
Yeah. O'Brien's is gone.
That's right. Yeah. O'Brien's is gone. Yeah. Well, the alehouse is still there. And so,
and one of the things I love about Beverly now, too, and if you extend out along Western into Blue Island,
we
have three breweries on this strip, too.
That's right. So, that's pretty amazing.
Horse Thief, and then you've got Open Outcry, and then Blue Island Beer Company. It's a nice little crawl going down the avenue.
And you've extended the death walk.
Extending the crawl. And you guys both, I mean, you got incredible support from that community, and basically no matter what ventures you two are involved in.
Yeah.
And what about politics, you guys? Before, we're going to stay on past 10 and talk more about the film festival and your book, Dennis. I do want you to read a little something from it, too. How do we look at gentlemen of Irish extraction? How do we look at the, and one who worked for Chuy Garcia's campaign against a man about whom you had nothing nice to say in
and still don't,
but you said it in print in your book.
The scoundrel.
What do you think about the political landscape as we sit here now?
And, you know, one thing I wanted to say, you know, Mike's book, Nothing's on the Square. When I went through that, you know, I told people, I said, hey, you know, I always thought I knew a little bit about Chicago politics, but this one will give you some real eye-openers.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, with Rahm, my thing was the way he handled things with the Laquan McDonald video. To me, that was the end of any respect factor at all.
Yeah.
That cut it off. And now, quite frankly, and it's not just because he's from the area, but I'm really excited that Jeremiah Joyce Jr. is running.
Sure.
And I'm looking forward to making a little contribution. I'm not loaded, but I want to give him some money because I believe in what he stands for. He's a down-to-earth guy with intelligent guy with a Yale background, and he believes in term limits too, which I think is pretty cool. He's not looking to grab the power and hold on to it. Hey, I'm going to work hard. I'm going to do this, and then someone else is going to have to carry the flag. So that's the kind of guy that he comes at you from the heart. That's who I could get behind.
He has an organization kind of behind him. You know, his family, they know how to organize. You know?
Exactly.
So I think he's going to do very well.
What about your former employer, Mr. Garcia? What do you think? I mean, he's running for Congress, too. He's a lock for Congress.
Yeah.
Do you think Boy, he can't.
He's got nothing to lose.
That's true.
You know, I texted him the other day. Uh-huh. Now, he's read my book, according to Cyril Regan, three times.
Trying to figure out how to win. This guy has a secret.
He didn't call me back after he read it. So, the other day, Pickle called me and said, Chewy's going to get in. I said, where'd you hear that? And then I thought, you know what? I'm just going to text him. And see, and so I did. I said, are you going to run for mayor? Because it would really help my book if you did.
Yes.
Please call me. No response. But, Chewy, we'd love to have you back in the fold because that would help my book sales.
Yeah, sure it would. Sure it is. Well, we're all self-interested. And what politician isn't self-interested? It'd be interesting to see if Tony Preckwinkle ever has the courage to get in. I don't know if she will or not. Who knows?
If she does get in,
yeah,
she's going to become... See, the nice thing about Ron being in the race is there was a villain.
Yep.
There's no villain now.
That's right.
She gets in, she's going to take a lot of heat.
I think you're right. Yep. I think you are right. These gentlemen are going to stay through the news, and we'll have Dennis read a little something from his book, and we'll tell you a little more about the movies that are part of the Irish-American movie Hooli later this month at the Siskel Center, and you should get your tickets now because there's some kind of free booze at the very
drink
good,
responsibly.
Yes, very good
Irish
booze. Yes,
compliment.
It's Irish whiskey. You can drink. The great thing about Irish whiskey is you can drink as much as you like and never get drunk. It's an amazing thing. I must tell you that coming up, the stories that matter with some anchor will be on from Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. We have something called the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom with an anchor to be named later. That's on WGN Radio. We'll be back momentarily, and then you'll get some news.
Too. I mean, you know, you're going to be floating in a pool and being
the grandpa.
What I'm saying.
Let him talk. The Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet weekday mornings at 7:20 on 7:20 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users to say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. And I must tell you, too, that when I was reading that thing about Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, which is where Dennis Foley, your kid,
who is on
the mend.
That's correct.
Went.
Yeah, he was there, and the family was overjoyed, I mean, with the care. My own son, Pat, is now 26. He was hit by a car on Lakeshore Drive as a pedestrian years ago, and it didn't look good. And he was in intensive care there for 8 days. He received, I look at that place as a godsend, because if he didn't get into Northwestern in time, he wouldn't be with us today.
Wow.
Yeah. He had brain surgery, lost his spleen, broken bones in his legs, his arms, deaf in one ear. I mean, and this kid went on to play, college lacrosse, and is now, he's going as an apprentice for, with 134. So that's good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. How does stuff like that happen?
He's a hardworking young man.
The kid in the book also gets hit in the head with a baseball bat. I mean, that's right.
Try to make the ties. Yeah.
But it was, I mean, obviously you had to relive that, or you're writing
Yep.
Dennis, when you picked out something to read later on after the news, this must have been a joy for you to write.
Yeah, I mean, going back and just my 7 years with Streets and Sand. I mean, we did our work, but we had a lot of fun, and
it shows.
And it was like it was a chance to go back and kind of relive some of that. You know, some of the guys I ran around with that became characters in the book, and of course, heavily fictionalize it. But there's a character in the book named a character in the book named the Hat.
Yeah,
I must say, I have a buddy that I worked with in Streets and Sand. His nickname's the Hat too,
and so was good old Dorothy Tillman too. And I know this has nothing to do with her. Time for the news. Coming up, the stories that matter with Roger Badish from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Welcome back. I have about 15, 20 minutes left with these two fine Irishmen, Dennis Foley and Mike Houlihan. Dennis, you want to read? Mike Houlihan could not. I'm three quarters of the way through the book and love it, The Blue Circus. Mike Houlihan has finished it and loves it even more.
Absolutely.
Loves it beyond.
I highly recommend
beyond
it.
Even words.
Yeah.
Dennis, why don't you read something so that the listening public can understand why Huli and I love it.
And I'm going to do a little bit here. I know Mike had said that he liked a character named The Hat.
Yeah.
So I'll read it. This is the first time. It's kind of like a character sketch of The Hat. It's called Hat Takes in a Movie. Jimmy the Hat Scarpelli sat alone in the back row of a movie theater. A city electrician for 15 years, Hat had long known how the system works and how to work the system. Some city workers always give a good day's work. Some never give a good day's work. And some, like Hat, fell somewhere between. If this is news to you, then an appropriate salutation must now be made. Welcome to Chicago.
Mm.
Hat's baby blue van, streets and sand van, slept in the parking lot beside the movie theater. From his seat, Hat watched a noon matinee unfold on screen and laughed his ass off. He loved comedies. Sure, he was fond of good shoot-em-up action flicks, too, but comedies, that's where Hat's heart truly sat. The 8-inch beef sandwich in his lap was half gone. Some of the juice had leaked through the butcher's paper and foil on the Hat's jeans and socks hoodie, but that didn't faze him, not one bit. You can always wash a pair of pants and a sweatshirt, but you don't always get a chance to munch on a Tony's beef sandwich. And then it goes on from there.
That's great.
A little taste.
Yeah,
I stopped over to say hello to him the other day to drop off a copy of the book. I'm going to make the rounds to the different places, the eateries.
Now, you're going to be doing a reading in Oak Park, right?
Yeah, I'll be visiting Oak Park Library. There's a librarian there by the name of Debbie Prizer, does a great job.
She does.
Authors, and it'll be in I think first Sunday of in December. And I'm looking forward to reading on the South Side series in January. You know, they have a great thing going. You know, the French Room.
Yeah,
which they do the readings at the Beverly Arts Center, so I'll get a chance to do that. And, having some fun at some other libraries and stuff, too.
Well, what I hope, and I think Mike Houlihan hopes, too, is that this book makes its way down that arduous book-to-film road, the arduous and precarious and every other kind of screwed-up thing, so it can be, this would be the glory of my newspaper career, when I can combine a piece that writes about Dennis Foley's, the film version of The Blue Circus, as being the Saturday night showing at the 5th or 6th, or maybe we'll go 7.
It definitely qualifies.
Now, you are getting more people every year. I mean, this one, and the movies, it's tough to always say the quality is getting better, but I mean, certainly, I think it is.
I'll admit it.
and you can admit it. And people are, the people who make these films are hearing more and more about how hospitable you are in
Chicago.
Yeah, you get a
reputation, that's good.
Yeah.
And we do treat the filmmakers like royalty, and they become friends, with each other, with me, So then they're going to be cycling films to me for the next couple of years and with festivals and stuff. Nobody knows more about indie film than other indie filmmakers.
Yeah. Now, what's happening with Our Irish Cousins? Is that making the rounds? Can people buy it?
You can buy it on my website.
Well, that's good. What's wrong with that?
I need a distributor, like that. I should.
Well, it's so, you guys are in, I'm hanging on by my fingernails in the precarious newspaper business, but being creative in modern America is really, really tough.
Challenging.
It is challenging.
Yeah.
Dennis, we were talking about earlier about the publishing business. I mean, it used to be, when you could say, hey, yes, I wrote a column for many years for the Sun-Times, and here I would like to publish a collection. And they'd go, sure, that's great.
Yeah.
Publish a collection.
Yeah. Those days are
over. And Mike and I were saying, too, if things slow down, the two of us can always make it as male models.
That's a fact. That's a fact. And I can go sell Frango mints.
Senior male models.
I can sell
the hand
Frango
models,
mints.
Right?
I can sell Frango mints. What is next for you, Mike? I know you're going to Ireland, and I know you have these three radio shows. And I know that you might get involved in the upcoming mayoral race.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have any other?
I have another book I want to do. It's called Southside Irish Mythology.
Hmm.
Because I got very into Irish mythology from a book that Lady Gregory and Yeats put together. And it's the book of Irish mythology. And the thing I love about Irish mythology is anything can happen. They can turn somebody into a pig or whatever. So I wrote some stories based on my knowledge of Irish mythology, They were in the Irish American News, but now I have enough stories that if I wrote maybe three or four new ones, I got a book. I got an anthology of some, but it's Southside Irish characters. Like Jackie Castro just died, you know,
right.
And he owned Ken's for years. And I had written so many stories about him and what a character he was.
Because he had a good send-off for him, too.
Oh, yeah. We had a party at Ken's, and I read some of the stories.
Hmm.
And I thought, this would be a good book that I could package, hopefully around Christmas, if I get my act together. Southside Irish mythology. So that's kind of
so it's based on, I mean, it's not real mythology, it's based on larger than life characters with whom you came in contact, sort of
mythical,
right?
mythical
larger than life, larger
yes.
than life, yeah.
Yeah, but there's some stories that are fiction as well that
yeah.
deal with. There's a character that I created called Ferocious Frank O'Hooligan, who came from Ireland with
great
his father,
name.
And they lived at 79th Street, but his dad had druid powers, and he taught his son only use them when they're absolutely necessary, and I got a story, well, he's able to do these things that are strictly out of the realm of normalcy because he has druid powers that somehow it's okay because he's a Catholic, and I don't know. I made it all up.
Well, good.
But it's fun. I'm having fun with it. Yeah.
And Dennis, what about you? You're taking over. You're going to start running Side Street Press.
Yeah,
you?
So, you know, the press, the guy that's the dollar man that's been in there is a buddy of mine, and, you know, he's originally from Nashville, Tennessee, Bill Donlin, my nickname. We've always called him Beanie through the years.
Mm-hmm.
But he's been really good, you know, with the book, and I got more involved, too, when we were doing the Chicagoese book.
Sure.
Getting used to it.
And then your other book, The Drunken
yeah,
Son.
Yeah, he helped out a lot with the movie, throwing a movie in and funds in for the movie. But he's getting ready to. He's down in Texas now. They just moved him down. He has a government job, and he's down there exploring, you know, possibilities about what's going to happen with the wall. And so, as of January, I'm going to take over, and I'm looking forward to it because, you know, I want to help bring Chicago
yeah.
voices to let people hear from more Chicago voices,
like this new Southside mythology.
What's the name again, Mike, of that character?
Which character?
The
Frankie.
Ferocious Frank O'Hooligan.
I like it.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
A whole series of books about Ferocious Frank.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, I'm going to give all the information. You go to SideStreetPressInc.com, DennisMichaelFoley.com, MikeHoulihan.com, or MovieHooly. Hooly means party.
Right.
Hooley, HOOLEY.org, and you should get your tickets to these September 28th.
You can watch the trailers
at
HOOLEY.org and see the trailers for the three films.
The trailers will hook anybody.
Yeah, I think so.
And prepare yourselves for this Cardboard Gangsters thing, please, ladies and gentlemen. You should have this Irish whiskey before you see the movie. This is the Rick Cogan recommendation. It is a joy for me to have you guys in here and talk.
Thanks.
You are two of the great, tireless, creative guys I know. We will be entertaining a female Irish novelist after we take a short commercial break. I'll tell you, Baez Goldschmidt. MVP candidates collide on WGN-TV. Cubs Diamondbacks Monday at 8:30 on WGN-TV. That would put them up against the Bears, and so we'll see who's big in this town. We'll be right back.
We come to the altar with our hearts on fire. We come with hearts on fire.
That again is the band Switchback. I am sitting here across this strange. What do you think of these studios, Catherine O'Connell?
These are your new studios.
Pardon me?
These are your new studios.
Yeah.
They're beautiful.
Yeah, they're pretty
Very
snazzy.
Modern.
They're
the view isn't
the
so bad.
The views are ridiculous.
View's lovely.
You need to tell me before we dig deep into this kind of psychological thriller you've written, The Last Night Out, which you have a really good grasp of a certain social milieu in the city of Chicago. I don't know if there's any so to speak. You've got a pretty good grasp of it. Before we get into that, tell me a little about yourself.
Well, I'm from Northbrook originally. And in a group, same as anybody else, Catholic, though, and Catholic plays a lot in this
yes,
book.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
And but I've always been a writer.
Yeah, when you say that, and I've read a couple interviews of yours, when you say you've always been a writer, what does that mean?
Well, as a child, my head is just filled with stories. And since I've had books published, people will come up and they'll say, oh, I've got a great idea for a book. And I say, I've got a lot of great ideas. You know, it's 100,000 words. It's the problem. So
that's what that is indeed. We've been through the same thing then, because people will come up and say, I got a great story. You know, I think I should write a book. I know how to type. And I'd say, well, no, see, it's not that. What compels you to be able to put in the time? Writing as a kid or in high school, in Glenbard or wherever you went up there, is one thing. But when you decide to become a professional writer, it is vastly, vastly different and more...
committed?
Yeah, you could say that.
Committed.
Catherine O'Connor, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's definitely something you have to put the time into. And when I was a child... As a child, I wrote lots of short stories, and I just have a crazy... I have an Irish imagination.
Yeah.
You know, you see that, the Irish, who we really are. And sometimes when I write and I look at my words, I think, who wrote that? I really sometimes don't even know where it comes from. But the commitment, you have to be able to afford to write.
That's true.
So, but I even remember Scott Turow. Who could afford to write, but he wrote his book on the train to work longhand.
Yeah.
And I've actually found longhand works very well for me when I'm starting or in the initial sketch and through it, because I was brought up writing longhand. And so my brain goes better pencil to paper than typing. But as soon, or computer now, but
yeah.
As soon as I have it, I can write 5 pages in a half hour on a legal pad. And I start out, this chapter, something's going to happen, and it just sort of takes its own avenue. It amazes me.
Let me
really
take you back, though, to when you decide that writing might become a career for you. What's the catalyst for that decision? Because, yes, writing as a kid and writing short stories and having a vivid imagination doesn't always lead one to an accomplished novelist.
So, I went to college like everyone else and became a journalism major.
Oh, that's a horrible mistake. That's the worst mistake ever could have made.
Well,
where did you go to college?
University of Colorado.
Okay.
And was a journalism major, but I've always wanted to be an author. So I decided I would collect experiences. So I backpacked
here. You know, I did that too. My collect experience when I was younger and didn't go to college, I thought I'd be a cab driver. And I thought that everyone who got in, them very naive, everyone who got in the cab, if they said, yes, take me to the Board of Trade building, I'd say, well, why are you going there? I thought, oh, my God, they have a fascinating story. Every single person told me to shut up and drive. So I got nothing that way. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Oh, no, quite right. I forgot.
So looking for experiences, you started to do what?
So I backpacked Europe, and then I became a ski bum, and then I backpacked Europe again. And then I thought, well, I'm going to write, so I'm going to tend bar so that I can write during the day.
In Chicago?
In Chicago. Yeah, I worked in Division Street. So, and later managed a bar on Rush Street, Pippin's Tavern. I don't know if
remember
you know.
Remember Pippin? Yeah, I remember every bar on Rush Street in the day.
I think.
Where else did you bartend?
Hang up a little bit, Lodge, and Pippin's.
Okay.
But anyhow, so I figured I'll do this in the day, or in the night, excuse me, and then I'll get up and write all day. But what happened was...
That's a hard lifestyle.
Yeah. So
yeah.
I'd get up about noon or one.
I have a headache. Yeah.
So, anyhow, it didn't materialize. And along the way, I'd also worked as a runner at the Board of Trade. So I think I've done just about every single thing a person can do. Because I actually got... When the book didn't materialize, and I was getting into my... later 20s, I thought, you know, time to grow up.
Did you ever try to get a job in journalism in that time?
No, I wasn't my...
You're afraid of us in the newspaper.
Well, no, journalistic writing is so different. You know, it's very structured.
Oh, yeah. Oh, tell you.
Well, nowadays there's a lot of imagination, but back then there wasn't.
That's a good point.
Yeah, but anyhow, so then I worked at the Board of Trade. Book never materialized, so I thought I better get a real job. And so since I worked in the liquor industry, I started talking to my purveyors, and I got a job with an excellent, excellent wine importer. And I worked there for 3 years, but as I would have anxiety attacks, and I'm not a nervous person at all.
Yeah.
So I was swimming against the stream. I wasn't doing what I was supposed to do. So,
let me ask you, and this is because I'm going to get closer to the details of your fascinating book. Again, the title is The Last Night Out. Were you dating around? Were you engaged? Did you have a group of girlfriends? What was your social situation at the time?
Well, of course, in the bar business, you have a lot of friends because you make friends with the people who work the same schedule.
Yes, and when you're off, you go out to the 4 o'clock bar, later night place.
And the places that aren't supposed to be, but they stay open afterwards.
Correct.
And the sun is coming up.
Correct.
Everyone else is going to work, and you're going home.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yes, I did know a lot of people in the bar business at the time.
So you had a relatively active social life.
Yeah, I would say.
Good. Okay. So, but writing is now you're going to be in the wine business, and have you abandoned? Did you think for a time that you would abandon writing?
Oh well, I totally did during the wine business because. That's a real job.
Yeah.
You take it home with you. You plan what you're going to do the next day. You have clients. You're entertaining. There is no time to really sit down and write. And you're not riding the train like Scott Turow.
Right.
So you're driving the car and to your next appointment. So anyhow, I was miserable. And I worked for the greatest company. Can I say their name?
It wasn't Leonard Solomon.
No, it was Cobrand. They represent Taittinger Champagne and Louis Jadot wines, and they gave me this amazing education in wine.
Wait a minute. Now I'm fascinated with this aspect of your life. What would you do? Like throw parties and have wine tastings for potential buyers, or?
Well, no, we sold to distributors.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Wirtz Corporation here in Chicago.
Yes, pretty big distributor.
Yes, it was Judge and Dolph at the time.
Yeah,
but there are key accounts involved also, so the better restaurants, because the distributors sell many different wines,
to include
mine, but so I would have to go in and try
and
to have them.
Convince these
exactly,
people, I get it.
So
I get
you
it.
Back up.
That's,
and then,
that's an interesting job, I must
tell
you.
Well, it was, and it's sales, though. The only thing I don't have trouble selling, or that I don't feel bad selling, are my books.
Yeah.
Because if somebody asks me about my book,
they're yours.
Yeah, and I say, you're not carrying it. You want to carry it. And of course, I wanted to sell the wine, but he was like, anyhow, I wasn't doing what I was supposed to do. And I knew also that if I kept doing it, I kept moving up. And then I thought, this isn't what I really want in the end. This is not who I am.
Wow, good for you.
No, and I'm not making that up. So, anyhow, I was dating a man who I'm now married to, Fred Venrick, who was a partner in the lodge and all of there. And so I was reading a Danielle Steele book one day. I said to him, I can do this. And so he agreed to support me if I did it and didn't go play golf or things like that.
Wow. Were you living in the city?
I was living in the city. So.
Okay.
And so then worked really hard on a book that will become part of this story now. Got it finished. And I thought, what do I do with this now? Now, this is back when things went in the mail. There were texts or e-books. So I finished a book, and then I saw in the paper in the Chicago Tribune, there was an article about a woman named Elizabeth Gage from Glenview. And it said, she wrote her first book, and this agent got her $1 million.
Oh, yeah, that happens every day.
So I pulled out my typewriter, and I typed this note. My name's Catherine O'Connell, and I just read in the Chicago Tribune that you got Elizabeth Gage $1 million, and I want you to get me $1 million.
Yeah, I'll take half. I'll take half.
So they said, well, send the manuscript. And so I was surprised. So I sent it, and I waited, came back one day, and they said, we think this is saleable, but you have to make some changes. So I made the changes, sent it off, and went on and wrote a second book. So 6 months later, The first one came back, and they said, we did our best. So here I'm back at the typewriter. Okay, well, now I have another book. So they said, well, send that. And then they sold that, and it's Skins was the name, is the name of the book, Skins, and that was 1993.
Wow.
And so I did not get a million. I didn't get close to a million. I call it my four-figure deal.
Well, but so what? You got a deal.
Yeah, but four.
Hold on. I'm speaking for the rest of the show to Catherine O'Connell. We got to take a little break for news. Her latest book is called The Last Night Out, and we will get into some details of that. We have taken her through her fascinating sort of pre-novel writing years, when she was the queen of Rush Street, I will say that, and Division Street. So please stay tuned. The Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. That again, ladies and gentlemen, keeping with this Irish, this, you know, serendipitous Irish theme of the show, those are the two fantastic musicians who make up Switchback. I have a half hour left with Catherine O'Connell, the author most recently of The Last Night Out. It is a haunting cover, because you know something bad has happened when you look at this cover. And if you can't tell from the shoes, a red high-heeled shoes in a messy kind of field, you can tell from the, it's not a subtitle, but from the other words on the cover, six friends, a bride-to-be, one murder, too many secrets. This book, Catherine, is a it moves fast, because it starts with a lovely woman waking up from a bachelorette party with someone she shouldn't be waking up with, right?
Well, yes. And
yes, Rick, you're right.
Well, I'm sorry.
No, I'm joking.
So, Maggie Trueheart, and I picked that name intentionally.
Of course.
Trueheart, because it can be a little bit ironic, let's say.
Yes, especially at the beginning of the book.
So
she is, I can't remember, is it 8 days or about 10 days away from her
wedding? 2 weeks from the wedding.
2 weeks from the wedding.
Gives me plenty of time for other activities.
For fooling around, yes.
So she wakes up with a stranger.
A carpenter.
A carpenter, yeah. And at the same night, one of her another attendee from the bachelorette party is murdered. And so this stranger becomes a person of interest, which is not really working well for her wedding plans. And so that is what drives the plot.
When she is to marry a guy named Flynn, right, who is like the perfect man, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or supposedly.
Well,
he looks it.
Well, I think for women in their 20s and 30s, I'd say that's an ideal many people look for. And Flynn is a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
But so her mother, everyone, she's at that stage of life, is, you know, is it now or never? And so she makes this wonderful match, and it's a wonderful match, but is it in her heart? We don't.
See, one of the interesting things that you just said, and one of the things that is compelling about this book, is people are not always exactly who they seem when we meet them. Do you know what I mean? When you meet Flynn, you go, oh, he's a great guy, but I and Suzanne is a wonderful woman, and all these people are great. There are secrets floating all around here. I want to read something you write about Suzanne, that she regretted going to Rush Street with the girls last night. She didn't even like bars. They were noisy and crowded, and people were always spilling on her expensive clothes. And that was before taking into account how infantile the men turned after a few drinks. There is a kind of leitmotif in this book of men being idiots, isn't there?
Oh, I wouldn't really say that.
Or they have the ability, after being overserved, to absolutely be idiots.
Oh, well, yes. Once again, I'm a former bartender, and I've seen people become invisible.
It's pretty amazing.
Or invincible.
Yeah.
It's alcohol.
Yeah.
It's good for meeting people.
Mm-hmm.
And then there can be a lot of after results that are probably not so desirable.
Catherine O'Connell, in writing this book, you did pour a lot of your own experiences into this. I mean, your own observations, and it's very observant about the city. It's very observant about the sort of nightlife scene. Was that easy for you?
Well, here's the thing about writing. A lot of writers try to set things in other places because they're curious or it fits the plot. But I think if you know a place, you can write it. And so why put that in New York City or Los Angeles?
I agree.
And so, because, you know, I know the smells, I know the sounds, I know the people, I know the accents. And I used another venue where I spend time in the front, in the beginning and end of the book, and the same thing. Why put it somewhere else?
And what is
that was an opening.
I know you worked at the Hang Up, but what's the name of this place in here?
Hangover.
That's right.
Oh, excuse me.
That's
Overhang.
Right.
Overhang. Thinly veiled.
Very thinly veiled. And I knew exactly what it was. You have a good for Sam. I'm going to give you a big compliment. There are a lot of you were juggling a lot of characters in this book. Was that do you plot beforehand, or as you said before when we first started this interview, you just sort of sit down and start to write? Do you plot it out? Because you do a really good job of juggling a lot of characters in this book.
Thank you.
Because there are the women. Forget the carpenter for a second, but there are the women who went to this party, the one of them who died, whose name is Angela
Lupino
Wozniak. Mm-hmm. Wozniak, a relatively...
Irish name.
Yes, Irish name, and a Rush Street name, too, if you will. Mm-hmm. A sort of mutual friend. Yes.
Stan!
Yes, Stan,
okay,
yes.
Now, you
it's
know
not based on, no.
No, no, but maybe that was subliminal because...
You didn't realize that? It occurred to me immediately.
Well, of course I know,
yeah.
Stan.
Yeah.
But also, there was a Wozniak when I was in high school. I just liked the name. It just kind of worked really well for my plot.
It's funny how things will work into life. But so you do, because the women protagonists, the dead woman and her about-to-be-married friend... these women have relationships, and so those guys are involved, and it's a lot of people.
Well, the women are high school girlfriends,
yeah,
from a Catholic high school, fictitious Immaculata, which there was one many years ago. My mother went to Immaculata.
Immaculata at Irving and Sheridan.
Right, but
yeah.
I didn't want to say Regina or Marillac.
Sure,
or anything.
I get it.
So I wanted to make different characters, and I would say from my friends, there's so many of us that are so different, but we're still really tight.
Yeah.
And so I wanted a character who was a professional, and I wanted a character who just wanted to be a mother, and I wanted a character who
lived in a high rise. And
yeah.
Wanted, yeah,
exactly.
So, yeah, yeah.
So I knew I wanted that, and as I said to you before, I start to write, and then they just take off.
Wow, interesting.
And they fill in, yeah.
Interesting.
But then also, I have a lot of it plotted, but as I'm writing, just these ideas occur to me, and I'm really proud of myself because I think in every book I've written, and I have four published, I have
four.
A contract for a fifth, which is due, I have to have it finished in 2 weeks, but I always tie up all the loose ends. And something that makes me crazy is Deus Ex Machina, am I saying it right?
Yeah, sure.
When you need something and the guy picks up his shoe and there's a key underneath it. You know, I work really hard at making a reason for people being where they are,
yeah,
in their backgrounds.
Yeah.
And so I had to work to make these six stories, because the one woman's dead, but you learn her story, overlap and kind of tie in a bow at the end.
It's interesting in this book that you it begins basically in the year 2013 and then flashes back to the wild, raucous 80s, which I think is a perfect time for the kind of craziness and tragedy that happens in the book. Was that conscious of yours? Did you find the 80s to be a really fertile ground for your imagination?
Well, this is when my story takes place.
Yeah.
Yes, of course.
Right.
But then how do you just pop a book of the 80s out there? And so now I'm playing back to what I said before. Why would I write somewhere I don't live, because I've done that before.
Yeah.
But why not just make it my age where I can think that way and think the way they thought then? And so it just worked better for me. And That's why
well,
I did that.
It works. How was it difficult? We got to take a break in a couple of minutes, but I'm going to keep you on till 11. Was it difficult to find a publisher for this? I'm taken with the fact that this is Severn House and Blackthorne. Explain the publishing house to me, will you?
Severn House is a British house,
right?
And they actually. They're successful, which is really hard in the publishing industry.
These days, yes, it's very hard.
And they're basically, they start out as a library, hardcover books. And so they sell library market, and they're very successful with that. Now, they were, well, I'll tell you another part of the story. So a young girl who does their buying read my book, and she loved it. So she gave it to her publisher, and she loved it. And they'd just been purchased 2 months prior by a company called Canongate.
Right, by a cool-looking guy with long hair.
Jamie Bing.
Yeah.
The second son of the eighth Earl of...
I've met
Jamie. He's a character. Yeah. Believe me.
He looks it.
Yeah, so anyhow, he bought Severn House because it was successful because he wanted to start a cover.
Gotcha.
So he's starting Blackthorne. So they bought it. I'm out in the hardcover now.
Right.
And then I will be their lead
You will be their first book.
Their first book when Blackthorne...
That is great. That is a triumph great significance in this weird, weird publishing world in which we exist. That's a great thing for you, Catherine.
It is. And I have an agent, of course, because you have to have an agent to sell. And it went out to a lot of houses. And they had... Severn House had so much enthusiasm. And they just loved the book so much. And Jamie Bing, we were back and forth on texts about the title. And so my agent said, well, what do you think? I said, you know.
Yeah, launch Blackthorne.
Well, because I've been published by other houses, and they're good houses, but they've such huge lists.
Well, also, I know, you get lost. You get lost. So, Blackthorne, you're launching Blackthorne Publishing. We got to take a little break for some commercials, and then we'll be back, and we'll talk more with Catherine O'Connell, who does have her own website, which all good authors should, it's, of course. Guess what it is, ladies and gentlemen? Catherine O'Connell, is it .net or .com?
Not because the singer, CatherineO'Connell.com.
That's right. I know Catherine O'Connell. Yeah, I like Catherine. She's great.
Wonderful.
She's great.
Wonderful.
She is this is CatherineO'Connell.net. We'll be back in a couple minutes. That's the last you will hear tonight of the Switchback. The voice from Switchback, Marty McCormick and Brian Fitzgerald. I have a few more minutes with Catherine O'Connell. I'll try to convince you to buy her latest book, The Last Night Out, which is set in Chicago and starts with a bang, so to speak, the murder of a woman and a number of, I'm not going to compare you to Agatha Christie, but there are a number of potential suspects revolving around poor dead Angela Lupino Wozniak. This book, have there been movie nibbles? Because this book is so cinematic. It's and the dialogue is great. And
there have been. And when it was first announced in the bookseller, which is the British PW, basically, and my agent immediately had calls from Netflix and three producers. And so now she's partnered with a Hollywood woman, and we'll see. It would be nice. It's every writer's dream.
Sure it is.
But I would rather sell the books.
Well, but the other thing, you know, what has changed in the last few years is that Netflix and Amazon Prime and Hulu need product. You know, they need, you know, they're not buying old movies here. They are trying to come up with original product. What have some of your friends thought, some of your friends from the old days thought when they read this book? I would think they would love it.
Well, of course, these are my friends, but I have people texting me saying I was up all night reading the book. And it's just, I'm really overwhelmed because a lot of people have reached out and said, you know, I couldn't put it down. And I've written other books, and people say, I liked your book. But this is the one that's the page turner, and that's the word every single author wants to hear.
With the other books, the part of the High Society Mystery Series, Well Bred and Dead and Well Read and Dead, when did those come out? I know relatively recently, right?
2007 and 2009.
Yeah.
I don't know where that time went. It's just gone. Yeah. But those mysteries also, and they're a widow who's trying to keep up appearances, and she goes to solve a couple mysteries. But the first one, Well Bred and Dead, was inspired by the death of a friend here in Chicago, an author named David Grafton.
Oh, right.
And he was sort of like the Truman Capote of Chicago. Yeah. And then it turned out he'd stolen somebody's identity.
Yeah.
And all these women, he was kind of a, you know what a walker is?
Yeah,
a gay man
yes,
who escorts
yes.
And so that's how David was. And so all his women friends were shocked.
Yeah.
And so they were trying to figure out who he was, and they did. But so I took it and ran with it and made it a murder. And
that's right. I remember that.
But it actually was intended, it's a mystery, but it's intended to be satire.
Right.
It was kind of a send-up of this kind of snobby-ish-ism.
Well, you have a, but you also have a good. I remember I read that. Did we do?
Yes, we did.
Yeah,
a show.
We did a show on that.
No, I'm really, really proud of that.
Yeah,
but I don't think it has the commercial appeal of this.
No, this. Mm-hmm. No. So. You got to kill people. You got to have dead bodies.
Yes.
You got to have dead bodies. This must empower you. Having finally completed this and having the response that the book is getting, did it make you go immediately back to your pad of paper and start writing another one?
Well, I have a contract for a new book, but may I say something else?
Just you may say anything you like.
So, my very first book that was published, Skins, got a Kirkus. Kirkus, for people who don't know, is one of the trade... A big trade publication that reviews
Second
books.
Second only to
Publishers Weekly.
Weekly.
So my first Kirkus review, they called my book Ingenuous. My first book, Skins. So I turned on my computer one morning and I said to my husband, oh my God, there's the Kirkus review. And so I said, I'm afraid to read it. And so I read it and I was ingenious. So I said, it just took one letter to... become a success with them. Same with Publishers Weekly. I got a starred review.
Yeah, that's something. Well, one of the problems for you, I think, Catherine, and the problems in general, is that the wicked turn that the publishing business has taken recently. There used to be a number of shows that would interview authors. There used to be a number of publications that would review books. I mean, it now seems, you know, maybe the Tribune will have a couple of reviews a week. The New York Times certainly still does, but virtually every other major newspaper has dropped their book sections. So it's a much more weirdly competitive world out there. Have you found that to be true?
Yeah, well, you don't get the exposure from the media. You know what it is now?
Right.
It's social media.
Oh, you're right.
But readers have always spoken to readers. And since Dickens' day, they have never
known what makes a book.
You could put a billboard in Times Square and say, buy this book, but if readers don't tell each other, it's not going to sell.
You're exactly right.
Yeah, so,
that's a good observation.
Mm-hmm.
What'd your husband think of this? You know, he's been with you a long time throughout this whole writing career. He must be very proud of you.
Yes, and he's been super supportive.
Yeah,
but
sure.
Some people say, and you sleep with this woman?
Why do they say that?
Oh, just you're because afraid, you know, of my macabre imagination.
Yes. But most people know you, right?
Yeah.
So. And you spend much of your time, you live in Aspen now.
Yes, we live in Aspen, where I ski-bummed after college when I thought I'd come up with ideas for books.
Yeah, it's a nice place, Aspen. You credit in here Aspen, what is it called?
Aspen Words.
Aspen Words, mm-hmm. What is that?
It used to be the Aspen Writers Foundation,
yeah.
And then they changed the name. It's part of the Aspen Institute.
The Institute I know well, but I don't know Aspen Words.
Well, so... It was the Writers Foundation. It was started many years ago by a couple of writers under a tree, and then became workshops, and then a weekly writers group, which I moderated for years.
Oh, that's great.
But then the foundation started bringing in speakers, and now there's a summer words session, and you can't even believe the caliber of the writers that come.
I'll bet. Well, because who wouldn't want to go to Aspen in the summertime?
Right, but we've got everybody from Woolleysh. We've had everyone from Willy Shayanka to Frank McCourt, who became a close friend of mine, and he actually gave me cover blurb.
I see it on
Well Bred and Dead. They've taken.
Frank McCourt said, "A hell of a storyteller, a master of plot, and a tart observer of the social scene." That is Frank McCourt on Well Bred and Dead. And if he were still around, he'd have something to say about this one, too.
Oh, yeah. Miss Frank, he was a wonderful, wonderful man.
You can go, ladies and gentlemen, to Catherine O'Connell, no exclamation, no apostrophe, .net, not to be confused with the singer, Catherine O'Connell, who we know pretty well around here. You going to have any signings in town? What do you got going on?
I have a signing tomorrow at the Book Bin in Northbrook.
Your hometown.
My hometown. From 6 until 7. And then I go back to Colorado for a signing in Basalt, but that's not going to mean anything to anybody here. But bookbinders in Basalt, if anybody from Colorado is listening.
38 states in Canada get this radio station.
I'm going to arrange some more in October and November, but I have a contract for a new book that has to be finished in 2 weeks. First Tracks.
Wow.
And it's about an Aspen Ski Patrol woman.
Okay.
Mystery, of course. But so I haven't planned a lot for the next month.
Sure.
I have to have this finished.
Meet your deadline. That's what I tell you to do.
I'll tell you.
Catherine, it's great to see you. It's also great to, an ongoing pleasure to read you, too. And it was great to learn some of your background in Chicago, too, the old Division Street, Rush Street days. And Dan Whiteley, thank you for the great connection. Once again, go to Catherine O'Connell. .net. You can also go to CatherineO'Connell.com, and you can get, this way you could get books and music.
May I say, Catherine with a C.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to.
Oh, yeah, right, of
K.
course. No, you're right. Thank you. Appreciate it. I will see you all next weekend. Thanks for listening to this Irish themed kind of hour. A bunch of very, very creative people in the studio.